Fifi is transfixed by our interpretive dance.
She loves a dance. Or she's heavily judging us.
So cute. Mew, mew.
There is a cat hair in my coffee.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
That's not your fault. It's Fifi's fault.
Oh. Hello. Welcome to a bonus episode of Murder in the Land of Oz.
Is that the way that it goes now? Murder in the Land of Oz.
I think so.
Cool.
Well, how's it meant to go?
I don't know. But we've sung it like that a couple of times now.
Murder in the Land of Oz.
Oh, yeah.
So to make up for our technical difficulties last week, we thought we'd do a bonus episode. And by we, I mean I. I am the one that decided to do this and Ellen was not very happy when I told her.
I was like, 8 minute pause. Sure.
Sure.
I was like, you want to do this episode as a bonus episode that we have decided to do in like 2 days?
Yeah.
You want to, this is the one?
So.
Sure.
Backstory. Ellen and I have competing theories on this case. And this case is the horrific murder of JonBenet Ramsey.
We've had physical fights. We've gotten scrappy. We've pulled hair.
Outside Metro Arts.
We
that's
literally
right.
had a, we didn't fight. Physically, but we,
no, but we
yelled
at each other.
Boy, did we make bystanders uncomfortable. I was very drunk. I had a bottle of rosé to myself. I really needed
help. That was the D&D night, wasn't
yeah.
it? Oh,
yeah, it was.
What an iconic Jess and Ellen night. Soon to be another iconic Jess and Ellen night this coming Saturday.
Yes, which will have already happened by the time this episode comes out.
Let's hope we are still friends because we have a successful podcast.
Yes, well, we can have a good business relationship even if we don't speak personally.
I don't like that. Uh-uh. No,
we
no,
just
no,
become
no.
complete. We're like, hello, welcome to the episode of Murder in the Land of Oz.
And then finally it'll be like Case File or what's the other one that lady wanted us to be like?
I don't know. I don't know.
Murder Down Under or something? Or?
Oh, All Aussie Mystery Hour?
That's right. Yeah, well, maybe it'll be like that finally instead of.
We should stop becoming friends for the good of the podcast. And then we can have a very business-like show with no jokes or banter.
I would rather die. Okay, so this is going to be a Cliff's Notes of like the case.
This is like, this is a thoughts, feelings, opinions.
Yes.
This with a wee bit of background.
This isn't an in-depth thing because this case is huge.
Yes.
Like this happened in 96, so there's a lot of research. There's been a few documentaries. Have you seen that Netflix one, the JonBenet one?
The casting of JonBenet, that one?
Yeah.
No.
I really liked it. Because
I thought it looked bad.
Those people were so weird because they were obviously auditioning to play like Patsy Ramsey and JonBenet and
I didn't
everything.
Watch it, but I've always been very interested in the process, particularly on Forensic Files. Shout out to the best true crime show of all time.
Of how they cast the reenactors?
Yeah, because sometimes the reenactors look fucking identical to the victims.
And then sometimes
sometimes they're like a different race and you're like, okay.
All right.
Go for it.
Sounds great. It's so funny looking at the because I'm in charge today of recording this. So if it doesn't record, then we know it was Jess's fault. And like the level of my voice is so high and scratchy. I'm surprised you're all still listening. I have my cup of coffee because I do have a show this evening.
We have bowls of coffee because we are very tired.
Coffee and water as well to hydrate myself because I do have to sing tonight.
Did you guys know that Jess is a singer and actor?
Fuck you. Fuck you. I'm jaded and bitter and twisted that we discovered this morning. So like,
Jaded, bitter and disillusioned.
Oh, yes.
Jess was like, I think I'm jaded. And I'm like, you're jaded, bitter and disillusioned. And she was like, wow, support from my best friend.
And
thank
then,
you.
I got a message today from somebody who was like, oh, you've like, you're not the sparkly
the young
eyed,
ingenue the that young you used to
ingenue,
be.
Ingenue, and now I'm like a fuck it all Sally Fields sort of type, which I thought was so
it's very
on brand
true. It's very true.
Of what 2019 has done to me. All right. Okay.
Let's talk about this poor murdered child.
This poor thing. Okay. So JonBenet Ramsey. So she was born August 6, 1990 in Atlanta, Georgia. She was the daughter of affluent parents Patsy and John Ramsey. And she was 6 years old when she was murdered. So she was named after her father, John Bennett. Lol.
This is some white fuckery. This is some Renesmee shit. I'm not speaking ill of the dead because it's not her fault, but what kind of crack were her parents on calling her Jean Benet? Like, she's lucky very that she tizzy. Was like, oh God, it's just the worst.
Anyway. Worst kind of tiz, you know?
It's just a very like, my daughter needs to have a unique name because she's unique. I'm going to call her Jean Benet after her dad. Like, if she was like Kath and Kim, you know, like, people would think that it was disgraceful.
Eponine, Darlene, Ray.
Exactly.
Eponine. All right. So she was named after her father, John Bennett, and her mother, Patricia. So she was Jean Benet, Patricia Ramsey, of, as I said, August 6, 1990 in Atlanta, Georgia. She was the youngest of two children. She had an older brother called Burke, who was nine at the time of her murder. Jean Benet was an outgoing Southern girl who enjoyed being the center of attention. Same presh. By age six, she had won multiple, she was a beauty pageant star. She'd won many titles thanks to her bouncy blonde hair, poised smile and glittery costumes. Her father was a multi-millionaire businessman and her mother was also a former beauty queen. Miss West Virginia of 1977. What a time.
What a time to be alive.
What a time to be Miss West Virginia. West Virginia. Fucking hell. They doted on their child in every way they could. Their luxurious home was plush with everything Jean Benet needed to live a comfortable life. So let's get down to business to not defeat the Huns. So, okay, mysterious death. You can say that again. So on the morning of December 26, 1996, Patsy Ramsey called the police after finding a three-page ransom note demanding $118,000 for her daughter's safe return. Where did my notes go?
Feeling for time.
Feeling
stalling
for time.
Stalling because of computer issues.
So, yeah. Note demanded $118,000 for Jean Benet's safe return, which was almost the exact amount, the bonus, her that Jean Bennett Ramsey had received earlier that year.
Yeah, it's his Christmas bonus or whatever, right?
Yeah. The ransom note was unusually long, and the FBI told police that it was very unusual for such a note to be written at a crime scene. The police believed that the note was staged because it did not have any fingerprints on it and included an unusual use of exclamation marks and acronyms. The note and a practice draft were written with a pen and a pad of paper from the Ramsey home. Fucking weird. According to a Colorado Bureau investigation report, there are indications that the author of the ransom note is Patricia Ramsey. However, they could not definitively prove it. The only people to be known in the house on the night of Jean Benet's death was her immediate family, her brother Burke, her mother Patsy, and her father John. The note contains specific instructions that the police and friends should not be contacted, but Patsy telephoned the police at 5:52 a.m. She also called family and friends. All right. Two police officers responded to the 911 call and arrived at the Ramsey home within 3 minutes. They conducted a cursory search of the house but did not find any sign of forced entry. Officer Rick French went to the basement and came to a door that was secured by a wooden latch. He paused for a moment in front of the door but made a critical error when he walked away without opening it. Unbeknownst to him, Jean Benet's body was on the other side of the door. John Ramsey made arrangements to pay the ransom. A forensics team was dispatched to the house. The team initially believed that the child had been kidnapped and Jean Benet's bedroom was the only room in the house that was cordoned off to prevent contamination of evidence. No precautions were taken to prevent the contamination of evidence in the rest of the house. So literally people were storming this mansion.
Yeah, they had all of their friends come over and were like, Jean Benet's missing.
She's missing.
We better have 18 of our closest friends to help
touching,
us.
Touching, fucking stuff. Everything.
Weeping, getting hair and shit all over the place.
So the friends and family's minister had arrived at the home to support the Ramseys. Victim advocates also arrived at the scene. Visitors picked up and cleaned surfaces in the kitchen. Fucking hell, possibly destroying evidence. Boulder Detective Linda Arndt arrived at about 8 p.m. with the goal of awaiting the kidnappers' instructions, but there was never an attempt to claim the money. So we're at 1 p.m. Detective Linda Arndt asked John and Fleet White. What a fucking name, Fleet.
Americans.
Jesus Christ. Oh, because of – that sounds patriotic, doesn't it?
Like armies and like fleets and like
fucking
the Navy
hell,
and shit.
They're tizzy as shit, aren't they? to search the house to see if anything seemed amiss. God, just touch everything. Thing was, this was Christmas time. So
all the A-list cops were on vacation.
They fucked off. So they had all these like, not that Linda, I'm sure Linda's great, like stunning.
Not a personal attack, but also not necessarily who you want investigating your child's disappearance.
Definitely not. John and Fleet White started their search in the basement. John finally opened the latch door that Officer French had failed to open and found his daughter's body in one of the rooms. JonBenet's mouth was covered with duct tape. A nylon cord was found around her wrists and neck, and her torso was covered by a white blanket. Ramsey made a critical error when he immediately picked up the child's body and took it upstairs. When JonBenet was moved, the crime scene was contaminated, obviously, and critical forensic evidence was disturbed for the returning forensics team. Each of the Ramseys provided handwriting, blood and hair samples to the police. John and Patsy participated in a preliminary interview for more than 2 hours, and Burke was also interviewed within the first couple of weeks following JonBenet's death.
Oof.
All right, another sip of coffee. The autopsy. Autopsy revealed that JonBenet had been killed by strangulation and a skull fracture. The official cause of death was asphyxia by strangulation associated with a craniocerebral trauma. Look at me saying big words.
It's a good one.
Craniocerebral.
Yeah.
Oh, God. There was no evidence of conventional rape. Oh, for fuck's sake, she was six. Although sexual assault could not be ruled out, no semen was found. There was evidence that there had been a vaginal injury, and at the time of the autopsy, it appeared her vaginal area had been wiped clean with a cloth, and her death was ruled a homicide. Oh, God. Why did I pick this? I'm so sorry. Ellen's like not smiling as in she's...
I'm smirking.
She's smirking because she knows I'm an idiot.
I was like, do what you want. I can't control you.
So the garrote that had been made from a length of nylon cord and the broken handle of a...
Is that how you pronounce that?
Garrote?
Garrote?
Garrote, sorry. Garrote. That had been made from the length of nylon cord and broken handle of a paintbrush was tied around JonBenet's neck and apparently had been used to strangle her. Part of the bristle end of the paintbrush was found in a tub containing Patsy's art supplies, but the bottom third of it was never found despite extensive searching of the house by police in subsequent days. The autopsy also revealed a vegetable or fruit material which may represent pineapple, which JonBenet had eaten a few hours before her death. Photographs of the home taken on the day when JonBenet's body was found show a bowl of pineapple on the kitchen table with a spoon in it. However, both John and Patsy said they did not remember putting the bowl on the table or feeding pineapples to JonBenet. Police reported that they found JonBenet's 9-year-old brother Burke Ramsey's fingerprints on the bowl. The Ramseys have always maintained that Burke slept through the entire episode until he was awakened several hours after the police had arrived. Okay. Experts, media commentators, and the Ramseys have identified potential suspects in the case. Boulder police, Boulder being where they were, initially focused almost exclusively on John and Patsy, but by October 1997 had over 1,600 people in the index of persons of interest for the case. Errors that were made in the initial investigation complicated the resolution of the investigation and applicable theory. Those errors included loss and contamination of evidence, lack of experience and technical staff on the investigation, evidence shared with the Ramseys, and delayed informal interviews with the parents. Lou Smith, who was a detective who came out of retirement in early 1997 to assist the district attorney's office with the case. In May 1998, he presented his findings to the Boulder police with other staff members to the DA's office, concluding that the evidence pointed away from the Ramseys. However, they were unable to successfully challenge the police department's steadfast belief that the Ramseys were guilty. The DA's office sought to take control of the investigation. Due to the animosity between police and the DA's office and the pressure to obtain a conviction, Colorado Governor Roy Romer interceded and named Michael Caine as special prosecutor to... as special prosecutor to initiate a grand jury. Two of the lead investigators in the case who had opposing views, Smith and Steve Thomas, resigned. Smith because he believed that the investigation had incompetently overlooked the intruder hypothesis, and Thomas because the DA's office had interfered with and failed to support the police investigation in the case. So a grand jury was convened beginning September 15th, 1998 to consider indicting the Ramseys for charges relating to the case. In 1999, the grand jury returned a true bill to change the Ramseys with placing the child at risk in a way that led to her death and with obstructing an investigation of murder based on the probable cause standard applied in such grand jury proceedings. But Boulder County District Attorney Alex Hunter did not prosecute them because he did not believe he could meet the highest standard of proving guilt beyond a reasonable doubt, which is required for criminal conviction. Mary Lacey, the next Boulder County District Attorney, took over the investigation from the police on December 26, 2002. In April 2003, she agreed with a federal court judge who sat on a 2002 libel case that evidence in the suit is more consistent with the theory that an intruder murdered JonBenet than it was the theory that Mrs. Ramsey did. On February 2nd, 2009, Boulder Police Chief Mark Beckner announced that Stan Garnett, the new Boulder County District Attorney, was turning the case over to his agency and that his team would resume investigating it. Garnett found that the statute of limitations for the crimes identified in the 1999 grand jury true bill had expired and did not pursue the review of the case against the Ramseys. In October 2010, the case was reopened. New interviews were conducted following a fresh inquiry by a committee that included state and federal investigators. Police were expected to use the latest DNA technology in their investigation. There was no new information gleaned from those interviews, according to ABC News. It was reported in September 2016 that the investigation into JonBenet's death continues to be an active homicide case per Boulder Police Chief Greg Tester. It's funny, the initial investigation into JonBenet's case, so that morning when all the police descended on the Boulder house, is how they teach, how they now teach the Boulder police not to do things.
Not to do things. Good.
Because they trampled that fucking scene.
I mean, look, at least it was a learning experience for us all.
At the cost of this poor girl. All right. So there's two theories.
Three theories.
Three. What's the third one? Intruder?
Well, there's the family or the intruder, but within the family you have John and Patsy and Burke.
Burke. Right. More coffee.
We need stimulants to get us through this one.
Okay, so there are 2/3 theories about the death of JonBenet. One is the intruder theory that was pursued by the Boulder District Attorney's Office, with whom the Ramseys developed a relationship. Although the police may have had the Ramseys under an umbrella of suspicion, they and the prosecutors followed leads for intruders, partly due to the unidentified boot mark left in the basement room where JonBenet's body was found. Early suspects included Bill McReynolds, who played Santa Claus, former family housekeeper Linda Hoffman Pugh, and a man named Michael Helgoth, who died in an apparent suicide shortly after JonBenet's death.
Never mind.
No, what?
I was just about to be like, Helgoth, yeah, but never mind. Don't make cool last name. Very sad about the circumstances of his life and death.
Hundreds of DNA tests were performed to find a match to the DNA recovered during her autopsy. Smith, the investigator that I brought up before, assessed that the evidence concluded that an intruder had committed the crime. Smith's theory was that someone broke into the Ramseys' home through a broken basement window. The intruder subdued JonBenet using a stun gun and took her down to the basement. That's right, because there were marks on her neck.
Yeah.
That's right. JonBenet was killed and a ransom note was left. Smith's theory was supported by former FBI agent John E. Douglas.
Mindhunter.
What a boss! Who had been hired by the Ramsey family. Believing that the Ramseys were innocent, Smith resigned from the investigation on September 20th, 1998, 5 days after the grand jury convened against the Ramseys. While no longer an official investigator on the case, Smith continued to work on it until his death in 2010. I was about to use Zane's mouse on my computer. Woof. Stephen Singular, the author of the book Presumed Guilty, an Investigation into the JonBenet Ramsey Case, The Media and the Culture of Pornography. That is a long bloody title.
That's a lot to cover in one book.
Jesus. Refers to consultations with cybercrime specialists who believe that JonBenet, due to her beauty pageant experience, could have attracted the attention of child pornographers and pedophiles. It was determined that there were more than 100 burglaries in the Ramsey's neighborhood in the months before JonBenet's murder. There were 38 registered sex offenders living within a 2-mile or 3-kilometre kilometre radius from the Ramsey home. In 2001, former Boulder County Prosecutor Tripp DeMuth, Tripp DeMuth. Like Tripp from Gossip Girl.
Yeah.
Interesting. And Boulder County Sheriff's Detective Steve Ainsworth stated that there should be a more aggressive investigation of the intruder theory. One of the individuals that Smith had identified as a suspect under his intruder theory was Gary Howard Oliva, who was arrested for two counts of attempted sexual exploitation of a child and one count of sexual exploitation of a child, charges in 2016. According to Boulder's Daily Camera, Oliva, a registered sex offender, was identified as a suspect in an October 2002 episode of 48 Hours Investigates. The killing of JonBenet, The Truth Uncovered, broadcast by A&E on September 5th, 2016, concluded that an unidentified male was responsible for JonBenet's death due to DNA analysis. Dr. Lawrence Koblinski,
we're having a wild day with names,
commented that the documentary showed that an intruder committed the sexual assault and murdered JonBenet. So, Ellen, you're of the intruder theory, aren't you?
I would like to officially state my position as that I do not believe that there is enough evidence to convict any person of this crime, but I lean more towards the intruder theory than the family.
Okay. All right. Okay. So I'm going to we'll go quickly through the family member theory. So
we can fight.
The second group of theories is that a family member was involved in JonBenet's murder. Boulder police initially concentrated almost exclusively on John and Patsy Ramsey.
Jean Valjean.
According to Greg McGarry, a retired profiler with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, or the FBI as we like to call it.
Wow, the FBI. That's incredible. Whoa,
that's so good. Statistically, it's a 12-to-1 probability that it's a family member or a caregiver who is involved in the death of a child.
Jess is taking a pointed sip of coffee while looking in my direction.
From the police's perspective, they did not see evidence of a forced entry, saw evidence of a staging like the ransom note, and did not find the Ramseys cooperative in helping them solve the death of their daughter. The Ramseys had stated that their reluctance was due to the fear that there would be a full investigation for intruders, and that they would be there would not be a full investigation for intruders and that they would be hastily selected as the key suspects in the case. One theory is that Patsy struck JonBenet in a fit of rage after a bedwetting episode and then strangled her to cover up what happened after mistakenly thinking she was already dead. However, she did not have a known history of uncontrolled anger. JonBenet's brother, Burke, later stated, "We didn't get spanked, nothing of the sort, nothing close, nothing near laying a finger on us, let alone killing your child." Theoretically, the strangulation could have been a red herring aspect to conceal what actually happened. Burke, who was 9 years old at the time of JonBenet's death, was interviewed by investigators at least three times. The first two interviews did not raise any concerns about Burke. A review by a child psychologist stated that it appeared that the Ramseys had healthy, caring family relationships. In 1998, Boulder Police Chief Mark Beckner said during an interview with a news reporter that Burke Ramsey was not involved in the killing of his sister. In May 1999, the Boulder County District Attorney's Office reiterated that Burke Ramsey was not a suspect. The investigators had never considered him a suspect. A $100,000 reward was offered by the Ramseys in a newspaper ad on April 27th, 1997. 3 days later, they submitted They submitted to separate formal interviews for the first time at the Boulder County Justice Center. In 1999, Colorado Governor Bill Owens told the parents of JonBenet Ramsey to quit hiding behind their attorneys, quit hiding behind their PR firm. A Colorado grand jury had voted in 1999 to indict the parents. The indictment cited two counts each of child abuse and said the parents did unlawfully, knowingly, recklessly, and feloniously permit a child to be unreasonably placed in a situation that posed a threat of injury to a child's life or health, which resulted in the death of JonBenet Ramsey, a child under the age of 16. Among the experts in the case were DNA specialist Barry Sheck and forensic expert Dr. Henry Lee.
Wait.
What?
Why did you do devil horns? Why did you do rock and roll of Henry Lee?
I didn't do devil horns. Dr. Henry Lee, if you don't know him, has been involved in quite...
Yeah, he was that guy who was bad at forensics, right?
He was blood... No. That was the other guy in the... you mean the Michael Peterson case?
Possibly.
Yeah, no, that wasn't him.
Okay.
That was another guy. He was consulted, but he wasn't the main blood spatter expert. That guy that literally just made shit up.
Made shit up, yeah.
No, he worked on the wood chipper murder, and he worked on O.J. Simpson, Lacey Peterson, obviously Michael Peterson's, and post 9/11 forensic investigation, the D.C. sniper shootings, and also reinvestigated the assassination of JFK.
What a resume.
I know. Quite. He currently resides in Connecticut, where he lived with his wife, Margaret.
Good for them.
Until she passed away. That's
sad.
Oh, Dr. Lee. Okay. October 13th, 1999, Alex Hunter, who was the district attorney at the time, refused to sign the indictment, saying that the evidence was insufficient. This left the impression that the grand jury investigation had been inconclusive. In 2002, the statute of limitations on the charges expired. July 9th, 2008, the Boulder District Attorney's Office announced that as a result of the newly developed DNA sampling and testing techniques... Oh, Zane's asking how we're going.
Great, Zane.
Going great. Thanks, Zane. So police sought to interview Burke Ramsey again in September 2010, according to L. Lynn Wood, a high-profile libel defamation attorney who the Ramsey family had hired in 1999. In 2012, Foreign Faction, who really killed JonBenet, by A. James Kohler, a former investigator under the Boulder County District Attorney, was published. This book discounts the intruder theory and proposes scenarios of Ramsey family involvement in JonBenet's death. The case of JonBenet Ramsey, a broadcast on CBS on September 18th and 19th, 2016, used a group of experts to evaluate the evidence and theorize that Burke hit his sister in the head with a heavy object, perhaps not intending to kill her. It suggested that the ransom letter was an attempt to cover up circumstances of JonBenet's death. Wood, on behalf of Burke Ramsey, filed defamation lawsuits against SBS, the producers program, and several of its participants based on its conclusion. And he won, didn't he?
Yes.
Burke won that.
Yeah, he did win. He did win. I state authoritatively, even though I actually don't know. Burke, I'm pretty sure he won.
Defamation. Yeah, $750 million.
What? $750 million?
Yeah.
No way. $750 million?
Brother settles $750 million lawsuit with CBS. SBS. Could you imagine? They did not have $750
million.
Michigan Circuit Court judge on Wednesday dismissed the lawsuit filed by Burke Ramsey. The terms of the settle. Oh, no. They probably didn't settle for that much, but that was how much he was suing for.
Bit much.
Come on, Burke. They only just accused you of murder, Dolph.
Yeah, you've just been hounded your whole life for people accusing you of killing your six-year-old sister in a horrific sexual attack. No big deal.
All right. There was also a false confession. I remember this happening.
I do too.
It was, 2006. So we would have been...
You're right.
Yeah, that's right. So John Mark Carr was a 41-year-old elementary school teacher who was arrested in Bangkok, Thailand on August 15th when he falsely confessed to murdering JonBenet. He claimed that he had drugged, sexually assaulted and accidentally killed her. According to CNN, authorities also said that they did not find any evidence linking Carr to the crime scene. He had provided only basic facts that were publicly known and failed to provide any convincing details. His claims that he had drugged JonBenet was doubted because the autopsy indicated that no drugs were found in her body. DNA samples were taken from Carr and did not match DNA found on JonBenet's body. So yeah, Ellen is of the intruder theory. I am of, look, I did think it was Burke for a while, mainly because his interviews creeped the shit out of me. I don't know Burke Ramsey. I don't know the ins and outs of this case. I'm just fascinated by it because I'm horrified that a six-year-old child is dead.
Yeah.
It's like terrifying to me. Yeah. This whole case like really freaked me out, especially it's really easy to understand why people were sort of swept up into the the goriness of this case because of her background in American child pageants, which the majority of Australians are really fucking freaked out by.
Yeah.
No judge. No judge. You do what you want. Like, your life is your life. But the majority of people are a bit sus to the child pageant sort of thing because it just feels a little icky.
Yeah.
And coming from a background of Irish dancing where that has become very pageanty, mm-hmm. like I can understand why people are uncomfortable by it because like kids wearing makeup and all dressed up and looking like they're about 36
yeah.
is weird.
It is weird.
And being one of those children that has done not pageants but Irish dancing where it has become really, really, really glitzy, mm-hmm. I can totally understand it and it is really uncomfortable. I am of the theory that I don't know if I believe that Burke did it anymore because of the more of these cases that we've looked at over the last year and knowing what it takes
to kill someone.
I believe it was an accident that happened, you know, whether it was Burke or Patsy or John, but I believe that an accident happened and these people were obviously devastated at the realization that she was dead and didn't want to deal with the shame of it and covered it up to make it look like.
My issue with that is that if you take the injury sustained by the accident, which is obviously the
head trauma,
the head trauma,
strangulation. Yeah.
So John Binet is somehow hit on the head. Something happens, whatever parent or family member was responsible for it.
Mm.
So their first instinct, rather than call an ambulance for the child that is still living because she was still breathing and alive when she sustained the head injury,
yeah.
instead of calling an ambulance, they strangle her with a garrote from a snapped off paintbrush and a nylon cord, bind her wrists, do some kind of damage to her neck, which leaves those train track style marks, and sexually assault her.
No,
that just doesn't make sense.
They never proved that the sexual assault had happened that night because there was the theory that she had had an accident on her bike.
But also weren't there wasn't there paint found?
Was there?
There was some kind of paint or fiber from the paintbrush found either I think in her underwear or inside her.
What?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
So I think that a bunch of doctors, pediatricians analyzed the case and said that they couldn't definitively say whether or not the evidence of trauma came from one incident or if it was from repeated incidents of sexual abuse.
I'm finding something about fibers in a paint tray.
There was something, I'm sure there was something about.
Yeah, I look, the statistics of kids being murdered, as horrific as it is, they're more likely to be killed by someone that they know.
But it's not impossible for them to be killed by somebody
that they
don't know.
I'm not saying that it's impossible, but I'm just saying it is way more likely that she was killed by someone that she knew.
But somebody that she knew doesn't necessarily.
Someone breaking into the house and like going into her room, you're going to fucking hear something.
But an intruder doesn't necessarily mean that it's not somebody that it's an unknown person. It could have been somebody that knew her. The Ramseys had a huge social circle. You know, John Binet would have been exposed to so many people from pageants, from, you know, work things with her dad, things like that. It wasn't necessarily some rando that came in off the street.
No, I'm saying like I don't think it's the intruder theory because they would have heard something.
But their house was huge. They did a test where somebody stood in the room that her body was found in and screamed, and somebody else was standing up in John and
were they that far away from each other?
It was a 3-story house with like 30 rooms. It was a huge mansion.
But weren't Burke and JonBenet near each other?
But if a man comes in and puts his hand over her mouth, what are they going to hear?
No, but they – I don't know. I don't –
I just can't.
The letter. The ransom
this
letter.
This is a point of contention because you said that people said that it was – likely that Patsy Ramsey had written it.
Yeah.
But handwriting analysis couldn't conclude anything. So it is not conclusive that Patsy Ramsey wrote it. There are similarities with her writing
but
and the ransom note.
Who's going to take the time when they've kidnapped or, you know, if it was someone not – okay, so say it's the intruder theory, all right? Mm-hmm. You're not going to sit in a place where you've attempted – where you're either attempting to take a child – there's no way you're going to sit down and write a ransom note there. And it was done on that pad and paper. Two drafts of it.
Yeah, I'm aware of that. I think the thinking from the intruder did it side is that the person who committed the crime was somebody, you know, in the vein of like the East Area Rapist or somebody like that, who, you know, he possibly had broken into the house before or was familiar with the house, knew where things were, knew where rooms were. He'd entered the house while the Ramseys were at the Christmas party and remained in the house.
And he hid somewhere. And
had time. Because as I said, their house was huge, and especially on that basement level, there were like, you know, that hidden room, wine cellar, things like that. There were plenty of places that he could have hidden. If he had known that the Ramseys would be out that night, which was probably quite likely because it was like Christmas Eve and things like that. If he was somebody that knew the family, he would know their movements, their whereabouts. He could have gotten off on the thrill of invading their space or being in JonBenet's room. And he could have been like, well, you know, I'm going to commit this crime tonight and I want to lay a false trail, or I want to, you know, get a little bit of that thrill. And so he wrote the ransom note.
That's a good theory.
I think it's more likely than, well, I think it is a possibility. I don't, even though there are lots of things in the ransom note that are very strange, like the length of it and the fact that a lot of it is like movie quotes and stuff like that. Like I think it was the FBI that said that it was like, you know, if, and this is an if it was, you know, an intruder or, you know, a legit ransom note, it was somebody who had never written one before. It obviously wasn't a small foreign faction. Like, that's not even a possible theory. But I just can't imagine – I just can't get on board with the logic that John and Patsy, upon, you know, coming across their injured child or something like that, would go to that amount of staging, right? Like, you know, imagine being the parent. Okay, I'll go garrot our six-year-old child who we are obsessed with and you go write the ransom note. Then we'll go to bed – and then wake up the next morning and be like, oh, where's JonBenet? And call the police.
Also, the CBS like two-parter that they did when they analysed that initial 911 call, you can hear Burke in the background.
But other people have analysed that and said that you can't hear it. This is the thing with this case, is that a lot of the evidence is so up to interpretation. It's your interpretation whether you think it's Patsy's handwriting or not. It's up to interpretation whether or not you think the DNA that was found was touch DNA from the factory or if it was from an actual person that committed the crime. You know, they aren't they're not yes or no questions.
Surprisingly, we don't know the answer to this case.
Yeah, oh my God, we cannot crack it. As I said before, my issue is not necessarily that, yeah, I believe an intruder definitely did it.
Definitely.
My issue is that there is no way for this case to be solved, and really we should all just shut up about it, because of the way the evidence was handled by the Boulder police when they first investigated.
Yeah, it's not good.
Not good. There are too many things that can, you know, as I said, be up to interpretation. There are too many things that can be twisted to fit any narrative. The thing with solving cases is that you can't twist clues to fit your story. You know, the clues have to lead you down to an answer. So when people say like, oh, she was fed pineapple, but her fingerprints weren't found on the bowl, that means that Burke must have fed her, or blah, 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 blah. You know, that is not what that evidence demonstrates. That is a story that you can create to get to the answer you want. And things like, you know, the very common, it's not so much anymore. It used to be Patsy who was considered to be the most likely culprit. And it was, as you said, like as a reaction to JonBenet wetting the bed, that Patsy lost her
Seems a bit far-fetched.
Super far-fetched. Like, you know, there is no evidence of her. So I was reading last night when I was brushing up a bit on the case that Patsy had taken JonBenet to the doctor something like 9 times a year for her problems with bedwetting, and she got frequent UTIs and things like that. I don't understand how a parent who is concerned enough about her child to take her to the doctor that many times also is so enraged by it, that one act of bedwetting, she's 6. You know, it's not that weird. But that is an example of something like that. That keeps on getting repeated, that, you know, I still read that to this day on Reddit and forums and stuff like that. Like, oh, Patsy was angry at her wetting the bed. There's no evidence to support that theory at all. It's speculation. And it's not supported by evidence. You know, and things like Burke as well, you know, when the tide, because it was Patsy, the bedwetting, then it was John covering up apparent sexual abuse. Again, no evidence of that. Her pediatrician said that she hadn't, she didn't show any signs of sustained sexual abuse. But then again, that person could have said that to cover up his own tracks, because if she had been sexually abused for a long time and the pediatrician didn't pick it up, well, then that's negligent on their part. But that was the story for a while. Now the story's gone to Burke. Oh, well, Burke was jealous of JonBenet, or, you know, Burke was the one who was abusing JonBenet or something like that. But that has all come from people after the fact being like, Burke's weird.
Yeah.
You know what? Lots of people are weird. You know what will probably make you be a pretty weird adult? If your child's sister was murdered,
yeah,
and people have blamed you for it your whole adult life. Yeah, that'll probably make you be a little bit weird.
Yeah. I think also the Burke theory comes from that incident that had happened the year before where he struck her with a golf club.
Jess, you don't have siblings. I once hit my brother over the head with a curtain rod.
What? Why?
Because he was my brother and we physically fought all the time. Yeah. I have two brothers, and the amount of injuries that I have sustained or I have given to them. One of my brothers once pushed me out of a moving golf cart. I could have died. That's just what siblings do.
My cousin pushed me off a slide onto concrete once. I had a concussion.
See? Kids do shit all the time. I just don't think, you know, if Burke hit her on the head or something like that, I mean, I fully 1000% don't believe it's possible that he garroted her or anything like that.
No, no.
I don't believe that the parents would have covered it up. She was still alive. She would have been visibly alive when she hit her head. She would have still been breathing. She still would have had a pulse. I just do not think, as a parent, when something terrible happens to your child, you know, there was no indication previously that the Ramseys had done anything bad to Burke and JonBenet. I just do not think that it is logical for your first instinct as a parent with no prior history of abuse or anything like that to be like, our child is injured. Better stage a kidnapping and homicide.
I think also, look, you might have turned me around on my thoughts on this, but I think it's also...
God, it's been years of us arguing this.
I think it's also the better story for people because, like, people don't want to think that there's randoms walking around streets that are going to break into houses, yeah, and randomly kill 6-year-olds. It's easier for us to comprehend. It's easier to rationalize. Oh, it was someone that she knew. Oh, it'd been happening for years. Oh, all this other stuff has happened.
And it's also because it's like rich white family, cute white kid with blonde hair and curls, you know.
That's the thing.
It's a zesty Hollywood story.
That's the thing. It is, if this was, if
JonBenet, yeah,
if JonBenet was a person of color, they wouldn't have,
or a poor white
or
person,
poor, or wasn't in the beauty pageant circuit.
Exactly, wasn't in America.
Yeah,
it would probably not be the mystery that it is today. But no, because it's rich white folk, that's why a lot of it
is really
been
weird, and there's glitter involved, and
yeah, exactly,
money. It's very, very fascinating.
One bit of evidence that I also think leads towards not the family is the fact that they didn't find any duct tape in their house matching the duct tape that was on JonBenet, and they didn't find the missing third of the paintbrush. So
the person took it with them.
Yes. So nobody saw the Ramseys or anything leave the house or go anywhere, or anybody come into the house or anything like that the night of.
Yeah. I don't know. I still, look, I'm under the impression that it was probably someone that she knew, someone who had exposure to.
Mm-hmm.
It might not have, that's the thing. We're never going to know,
unfortunately.
We're never
going to know.
And it's heartbreaking to me that a 6-year-old child lost her life, and all these people, including myself, have been grossly fascinated by this. And you're right. We should just stop talking about it, because it's sensationalizing something that should not be sensationalized, like children getting murdered, because that's fucked. But it's so easy to get fascinated by something like this, because it is so far-fetched from any grasp of reality that I have about my life as a child, and probably your life as a child as well. And yeah.
I think that, you know, even though I made a joke about her name before, I think that, you know, we very much on this show and in our daily lives care about victims. Mm. And we are both guilty of this as well. But, you know, acting like it is some fun puzzle for us all to solve, some like crowd-funded, you know, let's all go find the buried treasure. Like, it's not. And one of the big issues about this case, which you will know if you've spent any time researching it, is just the misinformation. The things that are repeated as fact that aren't, like, for example, the amount of the bonus. So it's said so many times that, you know, it was $118,000 was the exact number of his bonus.
It was close to.
His bonus, the money that he was given for his bonus was actually like $120,000, and it only came to $118,000 after taxes. So like that is like one of the most repeated facts of this case, and it's not true.
Mm.
You know, there are so many things that aren't true that just get repeated like, you know, it's fact. And no person on the internet and no person like us running a podcast can actually know the real facts of the case.
And the thing that I didn't know before going back and looking at this was about Douglas, Mr. Mindhunter, really? Actually agreeing with the intruder theory. I didn't know that.
It was the Cases That Haunt Us, I think, was the book.
Oh, really?
It's in the book.
It's Cases in the book.
That Haunt Us. Okay. Yeah. Yeah, quite a few. But he was also – oh, no, that was James Collar, I was about to say, but he's employed by the family.
Mm.
But it was that other guy. I think the thing is that the story that you have to create, as I said before, to fit the family into the picture is just insane. It is kind of easier in a way to be like, well, some wackadoo did it. Some random wacky guy who was insane came in and stayed in the house and wrote the note and did all this weird shit, because it's hard to rationalize that to apparently loving parents would do it. It is kind of the easier solution to be like, it was some random pedophile.
Mm.
Because then you don't have to contort what you know about people to fit a theory. You can just be like, well, I guess he was crazy. Well, I guess he liked ransom notes. Well, I guess he wanted to strangle her or something like that.
Yeah.
You know, you kind of have that safety of the unknown to be like, well, maybe this happened. Yeah. I don't know who did it. Well, I don't think this case can ever be solved.
No. I think that initial morning, they fucked it.
They fucked it.
They really fucked it. Like trampling that scene.
Mm-hmm.
Like just on the base level of not even knowing that she was murdered, but that is the place that she was taken from. Mm-hmm. Don't
let people in.
Don't let people in.
Don't let people in. Oh, also, I just wanted to say that I don't think it's suspicious that the Ramseys lawyered up pretty quickly. I think that is what you should do.
Well, yeah. And that's actually something I've wanted to bring up before. Like, if you are accused of something, there is no shame in getting a lawyer straight away, because
getting a lawyer just means that your civil rights aren't going to be violated.
Yeah.
You know, it's having somebody there to protect you and make sure that everything occurs above board.
And that's just like, no matter how much Law and Order SVU I've watched, like I don't know shit about anything.
No.
So it's like if something ever happened, I would immediately seek counsel because
don't talk to the police, get a lawyer straight away.
Because you know, I hate to, you know, we are very pro police on this podcast, but they're
pro good police.
Pro good police, not pro
bad police.
And there is a lot of evidence in a lot of the cases that we've looked at and a lot of cases in general where, you know, cops have done things not, you know, probably not out of a bad place, but just trying to solve this thing that's in front of them.
I mean, police are people. They're not always going to be – they're not infallible. They're going to make mistakes. And big mistakes were made in this investigation, and therefore I just don't think that it will ever be solved.
Yeah.
And I also, you know, everybody online, shut up. You're not going to solve it.
No, yeah.
Let her be, you know.
Yeah, let her rest. The
I think especially
thing.
After the 20th anniversary when there was just special after special after special. Yes, it's interesting, but also like – so cool that you're getting all this advertising money from like literally talking shit about a dead girl. Mm. You know, a lot of it wasn't respectful. A lot of it is very sensationalized. Yeah.
'Cause like it can get to a point when you've – and like I'm guilty of this as well, like being fascinated by this case, just forgetting that she was six.
Yeah.
Like think of children that you know at six.
Yeah.
And just be like, oh – I should stop treating this like a circus act. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, it's dehumanizing a dead child and just treating her as like a footnote in her own story, you know.
No, she mattered, she was loved and she was cared for, and it's very sad that she's
This case has had so much exposure and indeed overexposure that you can't really have the same argument of like, oh, we're keeping their memory alive. She will never be forgotten.
No.
You know, there's no way that JonBenet will ever be forgotten. And, you know, it's just about being appropriate. And, you know, we like a joke. We like to joke around.
Love a joke.
And things like that.
Not at the expense of a dead 6-year-old.
Yeah.
No, thank you. Okay. Well, that took a turn, didn't it?
I feel a bit depressed.
Me too. I'm still glad we talked about it because I do think the people that I've in my life that aren't true crime people, when I talk about
this, like, is the case work, that people know about.
Yeah. When I talk about the work that I do, they often bring this case up or other ones and just, you know, oh, well, your fave must be JonBenet.
We don't like the term favorite cases.
No. And yes, to an extent, I am fascinated by this sort of stuff, but especially since doing this podcast, it has made me very much aware that this is about people getting killed, which is the most horrifying thing that can happen to a person
mm-hmm.
and can happen to the people that you love. This is a very real problem that happens every day.
Mm-hmm.
And the sick thing is about doing something like this is that we're probably not going to run out of cases.
Never.
Because this is going to keep on happening. So just want to point out, we are very victim first.
Yeah.
We do not, since we are not of the standpoint that we sensationalize murderers, because they do not need to be sensationalized. They are cowards. They are sick people who need help, who need to be put in prison for what they have done, because gross. Yeah. So
we finally did it.
Yeah.
JonBenet, we've been threatening it since we started the podcast and we did it.
And we did it and you won. And
victory tastes so sweet.
Does it? Or does it taste extremely depressing?
No, it is extremely depressing, but I'm glad we got to talk about it and we were very rational.
Yeah. I think I was still rational.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, the thing is that, you know, I don't have skin in the game.
No.
You know?
I definitely don't. And yeah.
Thanks for listening. Sorry about the technical difficulties. Hopefully this makes up for it.
Look, technical difficulties are going to happen and that's fine. So next week you will be hearing from me?
Yes.
Yes. Ivan John Jones or the Pacemaker murder.
Pacemaker.
Thank you, Forensic Files.
Shout out to Forensic Files. World's best show. There is a lot of
siren activity. Siren action. Because what I didn't know is that that's a firehouse just there.
Yeah.
Yeah, cool. All right. Well, thanks guys for listening. Make sure you're subscribed. Please rate and review. Find us on Facebook at Murder in the Land of Oz and find us on Instagram at Murder in the Land of Oz. If you have any cases, especially for our South Australian season that's coming up, please send us an email at murderintheland of oz@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. Thank you so much for joining us. Goodbye.
Bye.